like being home, my computer.
All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, August 24th. James was rambling on about something or other, and I just decided to start recording. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
Doug's helper.
James Davis from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com/MLB. Get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. That'll include MLB, includes NFL, which we have our first run of projections up, and we'll have some NFL content going up this week. So go check that out. All of our subscriptions fall under one header. So you pay your $29.95 covers you for every sport that we're covering at the time. You're all good to go, free for 3 days, and like I said, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, you were going on and on about something where you live. Nobody really cares. That's why I started.
I was pointing out, actually, if you want to catch people up, if you want to go there, Doug, was that New Jersey was ranked the fourth least free state in the union per the Mercatus Center's findings, and I happen to live in New Hampshire, which is the freest state in the union. So,
but that's actually not what we're discussing. Then I said New Hampshire's super boring, and then you started rambling.
And then I pointed out that you spend 98.8% of your time sitting around on your computer playing daily fantasy sports. So I feel like that kind of
that number's really, really high. I'm not saying the number's insignificant, but the 98% is way too high. Bigger
94.
Last night, Rich Hill, I believe, was dealt probably the biggest. I'm trying to think. See if you can think of a bigger gut punch. Rich Hill has a no hitter going into the 10th. They bring him out for the 10th inning, and because his pitch count was so low, and he allows a walk off home run as his only hit. So he was the only guy that had a no hit bid. Broken up and with a walk-off home run loss. Would you say that is like about as big of a gut punch as you can get as a pitcher, like to get that far, to go that deep in the game, and then to just kind of walk off the mound with a loss as the Pirates celebrate?
Probably. I mean, that's pretty damn savage for sure. I remember just pulling that up because I didn't realize the no-hitter was going on and seeing that it was 0-0 going into the 10th, and I was like, oh, I wonder what's going on here. I was like, oh, man, who played Rich Hill? And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, poor guy. That's a real sad one.
The only thing that was worse, the only thing I would say that made it worse for the Rich Hill is having to watch John Jaso's stupid dreads bounce up and down in like the in the Pirates celebration line. Like, so if you're Rich Hill and you're walking off, and Jaso didn't play, and you have Harrison kind of rounding the bases, and then you see Jaso's stupid looking dreads just kind of flopping all predator, like flopping all over the place. As like, I feel like that is probably the thing that just made it that one tenth a little bit worse. Like, if it was already bad, that was probably the thing that just probably, if it was me personally, as I watch it, that was the thing that put me over the edge. So I can only feel for Rich Hill. Let's talk about a double slate in baseball today. We have an early. We're gonna focus on all the early games. They're sort of like broken up between like the 12:10 and then the 4 o'clock's not really on there. And there's a 2:15 slate. There's all these weird sort of timing issues on the early slate. And then we have the 7 p.m. So I'll kind of just lump all of the early games together, even though they might not be completely sectioned off like that, depending on what site you're playing on, or one of the sites that I play 98% of the time of my life. When you're looking at the early slate, I mean, the pitching is so bad. Does it like strike you almost as like close to like skip territory in terms of like whether or not you even want to focus your time and energy on a slate like this, just considering some of the pitchers that are here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm of two minds here because I do think, at least on FanDuel, you can go with Robbie Ray and probably get a pretty significant edge on the field. I mean, obviously it's his first game back from the DL, so that complicates things pretty dramatically, but all the other options are just stone cold terrible that I still feel like you get a rather significant edge by going in that direction. DraftKings is a little trickier for me. The pitcher two slot is a real problem, and I guess you could do something like Ray and maybe Jaime Garcia and kind of put your fingers over your eyes and kind of squint through and hope it turns out okay. But yeah, it's such a quagmire. I think you're going to wind up taking in a lot of variance in your life by playing this slate, but you know, with how solved baseball is in general these days, I think maybe that's a time where you can get an edge. I'm not sure, because I imagine there's a lot of good players, sensible people who won't be playing this slate, and that probably increases the edge for everyone.
You do run into that problem in the DraftKings starting pitcher two slot. And like you said, there's even just enough of a question about Ray. Guys that are on the guys coming back from the DL for the first time always just really worry me with what their pitch counts are going to be, right? Like, if the last game before he left, he threw 25 pitches, clearly he got hurt that game, right? Sometimes these news pieces aren't great about saying how many pitches a guy threw in a rehab start. Like, they'll say he threw a rehab start and it'll be like four innings, but typically those four innings are like low leverage, sort of just like just kind of getting your feet wet sort of territory, and they rarely give how many pitches were thrown, which I can't ever imagine is more than like 70 to 75 for one of these rehab starts. Even an increase of like 33% increase, which no club is ever going to do, that's how you get to 100 pitches. Like, what do you think? Like, we can't, let's say we had Robbie Ray at like 5.5 to 6 innings on average for like when he's healthy. Where do you think his innings should be coming back, like coming back for the first start back from the DL?
Ugh, it's tough to say. I mean, he was a guy that was getting stretched out a little bit more than like your average pitcher this season. Like, he can go out there and pitch 109, 115 pitches in a game when everything is clicking properly. I would guess for an innings pitched total, probably something like 90, and that probably makes him a favorite to throw something like probably like mid-5s innings per game. I don't know. I mean, like, if you just look at his game log, he does tend to go around 6 innings. Yeah, it's tough. It's very tough to figure out what the right number is without actually doing the math on a spreadsheet.
And this, this is like just that other added layer of wrinkle or whatever you want to call it, of just like why this slate is just not that good. Now, even if you thought he was only going to throw like 5.5 innings, let's say, he's probably still just the play just because he's so much better than really anybody else that's going here. The rest of the names on this list are, none of these guys strike anybody out. Like, the only guy on this list that for going for the early that even has any, like, sort of like close to strikeout per inning stuff is Rafael Montero, and that guy walks the absolute ballpark. Like, and so and he's facing Arizona, so it's not like you're not like getting away with anything there. All the other guys here, like Alex Cobb, like what's up with Alex Cobb? Alex Cobb had started his career as basically sort of what we were talking about, like a strikeout per inning guy all through the minors. Even in the majors, kind of turned it on for like 2013. He's striking out 8.5 per 9. 2014, he's up over 8. And now he's down to 5.88 Ks per 9 through 147 innings. So it's not like a small sample size. Like, just a number like that for him. Like, he was never like a Cy Young Award winner or anything, but he was like a prospect. He was a real guy. And to now be a mid-4s XFIP guy, close to 150 innings of less than 6 Ks per 9, like, is that number, like, are we just seeing a completely new Alex Cobb, and he's just not going to be that guy that kind of came up through the minors as maybe, and he was one of their top prospects for a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, keep in mind that he didn't throw a pitch in 2015, and even last year he threw, I think, 40 innings worth of pitches for the whole season. So I think there's just a good chance he just rusted off. Like, I mean, it's very hard to be a pitcher in the major leagues in any case, and when you just can't even practice for a whole year, and then you throw 40 innings the next year, I think there's a good chance he's just kind of busto, at least in the current iteration of him. And maybe he's like on the, it's basically effectively like a long-term rehab stint at the moment, but yeah, it's not looking good.
I do think that people probably for that starting pitcher 2 slot will probably go Garcia, mostly just because he's got a little bit of Vegas in his favor here. And then, that's pretty much a pick'em. Although the problem with him is that he just has to run through an entire right-handed lineup of Detroit bats, basically. So he goes Kinsler, Matuk, and then they get Upton, Miggy, and then Castellanos, and then V-Mart, who actually is better for his career against lefties. I mean, that's... And then the bottom of the line is pretty bad, but they're all still righties. Like, so a guy like Garcia is going to, he's just going to have real problems too. And that line started at over under of 9 and has already been bet up to 9.5. And that was almost all coming up on the Detroit side, right? So like it started with him as a favorite and now it's down to a pick'em. So most of the implied runs from Vegas, at least, came up on the Detroit side. So I think that worries you. This is all to say, early slate, for me, is probably just a skip in general on DraftKings, at least, just because I just am not seeing a path for a starting pitcher too. Unless, like I said, you want to take a guy like Montero and just sort of hope that he can dial up enough Ks to like not totally kill you. But he has huge blow up potential in his own right, because he just walks too many guys, right? So like and he's had some true blow up games too, like on his resume. And that, again, he can kind of, there are times where he can sort of hold it together, you know, like three earned runs over 6 innings or something like that. But he's got times where he doesn't even get out of the third. So this is all to say, looks very, very dicey on the early slate. I tend to want to play DraftKings more than FanDuel, just because I think it's just a better game over there. But I think this time it feels like a skip. Let's go into the evening. Real quick on stacks for the early. With this many bad pitchers, there's like a team that stands out to you as that you would want to, I don't know, maybe focus a little bit more on stacking here? There are, like I said, guys like Kohler and Worley and Jake Thompson. Like, there's some bad pitchers here. Is there one team that stands out to you for stacking purposes?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we saw the Phillies get some stacking exposure last night, and I think that's another direction you could go today. Vegas likes them as the highest overall implied total on the early slate, and I think for good reason. You know, Vance Worley, not really a real pitcher by any stretch. They also know him, Doug. It is a revenge game for Vance Worley, so I don't know if that matters.
They don't have they don't have the highest. The Marlins have the highest implied run total.
I'm sorry. I was switching that line in my mind.
Yeah.
Right. So this is to say both sides of this game look great. Eichhoff and Worley both can give up the home run ball. You get them out of Miami and into Philly, and I think you have a pretty good spot there. So, that game would be where I would target. I think you can do pretty well by targeting that game as well, because neither of those teams feature players that are particularly expensive outside of Stanton, I guess. I think that's a good place to start. I think that otherwise, you know, maybe you're looking at the Yankees against Fulmer. Fulmer's not a terrible pitcher by this slate's standards, but, you know, they just have a lot of guys that can bruise, kind of a 6Ks per 9 type guy. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where I would look. But mostly what I'm going to be looking at is my other work during the afternoon, because I don't think I'm going to play this slate.
As we get ready for football. Now, some of those Phillies guys, like Tommy Joseph was pretty chalky last night. I'm not sure he'll play for sure against the ready. Rhys Hoskins was really, I was actually surprised about how popular start he was. He was like close to like 60% in cash games went yard. He's another guy that probably would be highly owned today, only 3,300. He's really come up out of the minors and done pretty well. Now, I do think people will stack Philly. I think you see Gordon and Stanton is pretty chalk, probably Yelich too. So I do think most of the exposure, at least for bats, will come through that game. They are just projecting as the highest. Both those teams are the highest implied run lines on the day. Marlins a little bit higher at 5.5, and Phillies kind of trending up toward 5. Let's take a look at the evening slate of games here. Pitching here is better, but not necessarily easier, right? So, like, there's better pitchers on the evening slate. They fall into different categories of really expensive / bad matchups. But on the evening, do you think... So we saw Kluber was expensive last night, and he was great against the Red Sox. Now, going the other direction here, Sale gets the Indians, where Sale's clearly the best pitcher. I mentioned this yesterday in the podcast, but when you look at WAR for the season, Sale has like a 7.5 WAR on the year, and the next closest guy is like 2 full wins below him, which is like, you really never see spreads like that. I mean, you saw spreads like that when like Kershaw was in his complete prime, but really to be 2 wins over replacement, then the next highest guy on the list is like, that's pretty rarefied air for a pitcher. And I mean, but
the thing with a pitcher is like, you just really can't really have more opportunity than everyone else. Like, everyone pretty much gets 32 or 33 right. starts. And so to have your baseline expectation to be 2.5 wins over the next best guy is totally unheard of.
Right. And so like that actually does start putting him into like MVP category. He still probably doesn't get there, but and pitchers just usually don't trend to get there. And there are probably enough American League guys that have been so good this year, like Trout and Judge and guys like that I don't think Sale probably enters the discussion, but he really should, because the WAR is just insane. Now, that being said, he does face Cleveland tonight, who is one of the best offenses in baseball here. Is this a spot where you want to pay for Sale? Like, he's 11,000 on FanDuel, which is definitely not cheap. He's really open like 12,000 something on DraftKings. Is it simply too expensive to play him just because of the matchup, or is he just the kind of arm that you kind of lock in there? He's almost 14,000 on DraftKings, 13,700. Is he just the kind of guy you lock in there just because he's just so much better than the rest of the field?
No, I don't think you need to just insta-lock him in there. And, you know, we have a very similar situation to what we had yesterday, actually, where both of the pitchers we'll consider in the high and the low ends are just better than their counterparts. So yesterday we were kind of deciding between Kluber and Luke Weaver. And Luke Weaver, the only reason he was there was because he was so cheap and he was facing the Padres. And, of course, if you played last night's slate, you'll know that Luke Weaver went out there and threw 7 innings of shutout ball where he struck out 10 guys. The Padres are just kind of that bad. And so tonight we can choose Sale against the Indians, which is very similar to our Kluber against the Red Sox pick from last night. Sale's better, but the Indians are also better. And in my mind anyway, that kind of evens out a little bit. And then we have Carlos Martinez against the Padres. And I think you can make a pretty good case that Martinez against the Padres is the safer play, just because the matchup, they're kind of the polar opposites. I mean, the Indians actually aren't the best in the majors necessarily against left-handed pitching, but they are a top 10 team, whereas the Padres are just the standalone runaway best matchup for a right-handed pitcher. And they also, you know, the thing that they struggle with the most, which is striking out, is really where Martinez, you know, makes it rain. You know, his 9.5 Ks per nine is really the whole thing that gets him by. You know, he's a little bit wild, tends to give up the home run ball, but when he's striking guys out, he can really go deep into games. He can put up big numbers. And for me, I think I wouldn't blame anyone for playing Sale by any stretch, but I think if you're doing that, overplaying Martinez in a matchup like this, you're basically making the declaration that Sale's stuff, it doesn't really matter who he faces, he's still going to get his strikeouts regardless.
Yeah, and that's kind of the question, right? Like when you're a guy, he's striking out almost 13 batters per nine, which is pretty much unheard of. Like for through 175 innings, for that number to be sitting close to 13 Ks per nine is just kind of is absolutely ridiculous, right? Like it's just and for him it's actually crazy because it's like, even that kind of came out of nowhere. Like, and that was from coming out of nowhere from him already being great. Like, so 2015, he had 12 Ks per nine. He's to increase it. Then last year, he kind of struggled. Struggles in quotes. He still struck out more than a batter per inning. But to bump it all the way up to 13 is just completely nuts. So I'm with you. It's probably too expensive, especially for his money line. Like a guy like when you're up to 13.7, even up to 11,000 on FanDuel, you kind of need to be pushing. You need to be pushing probably like minus 200 or something like that in terms of win expectation at the minimum, just to, because that's the where you're going to start catching up in terms of like just when you're going to get some of your implied points from. And he's just not there. Like they're only minus 160 right now. The implied runs for the Indians is right around a little bit north of three, which again for Sale, that's high, right? Which is, again, this is like so crazy to throw in these numbers out, but if three implied runs against him this season, is kind of like the most that he's had from any team. So, nah, I'm with you. Carlos Martinez probably ends up being the play minus 220. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, if it matters to you too, Sale's worst start of the season was against the Indians. He allowed 7 of the 51 earned runs he's allowed this season in that one start. So I think that will matter to some people. And at the very least, we know that he doesn't, like his superpowers don't necessarily automatically apply in a matchup like this. So, yeah, I mean, you don't want to take one start as gospel by any stretch, but it's so many standard deviations away from his typical start to go 5 innings and allow 7 runs that it's at least on my radar to where, like, if he had destroyed them, you know, and then I was trying to come up with a tiebreaker between Martinez and Sale. Say he just had a typical like 8 innings, 13 Ks start, which he did basically on the bookends of this terrible start against Cleveland. Then I might be like, well, whatever, dude. Like, let's not sweat, you know, Cleveland's individual numbers yet year to date. But in this kind of case, I think I'm just going to trust whatever the system spits out. I'm not going to do any hand finagling. And that probably, at this point, looks like Martinez, unless we get some really cheap guys that come up to the plate.
Nah, I think Martinez is just in too good of a spot here. So like I said, he's minus 220 favorite. The Padres are well-documented as just being horrible. Their lineup has not changed really at all for, you know, at least in the short term. And this is just a bad team. I know, again, like I know they got to Lance Lynn the other day, but Weaver was able to shut them down because Weaver and Carlos Martinez also just have the K stuff that Lynn doesn't have, really. And so like when you're a guy like Lynn and you can't generate a lot of Ks at this point in your career, you can just like the bad teams can still kind of put wood to the wall on you. That doesn't appear to be the case here. And they're just not a very patient team either. So like the one way you can get to Martinez is just kind of wait him out at times because the walk rate is up over 3, which is probably pushing up to the levels of really much higher, and he'd be in probably serious trouble. But he does allow walks. He does at times just kind of run long innings. The Padres are just not the kind of team. They're just not the kind of team that extend innings. They stink. So especially, man, the bottom of that lineup, just reading some of these names is so brutal. After those two guys, when we're looking maybe as a pivot away possibly from either of them on FanDuel or especially starting pitcher two on DraftKings, where I do not think you're going to be able to pay, I mean, this would be more than 50% of your salary to go to Sale and Martinez. Starting pitcher two, I mean, some of these other guys, Keiko, Strasburg, Arrieta are expensive. Any of these guys interest you? Are you looking to go maybe a little cheaper to pair with one of the bigger arms? What do you think for starting pitcher two on DraftKings?
Yeah, starting pitcher two on DraftKings is going to be a real test of your courage tonight, I think, because I think in my mind you sort of have two options. You can just go into full punt mode. You can play someone like, say, Luis Perdomo, who's kind of fits that role of just like bad starting pitcher two, who's just really cheap and lets you play credible bats, which is just sometimes what you have to do on DraftKings, on small slates in particular. What I like about Perdomo is this season is that he does go out there and throw innings. Like, he's 22 starts, 122 innings pitched. So, you know, that kind of does give him a little bit of separation from some of the other kind of bottom feeding terrible guys. I don't like Perdomo. He's not a good pitcher, but a 4.10 xFIP, you could do a lot worse there. I again, it's hard for me to envision pulling the trigger on that, but the alternative would be running out someone like, say, Trevor Bauer. Now, Bauer is kind of an interesting case in his own right because, like, if we do the old test I just did with Sale, he did just cut Boston down earlier this season, 6 2/3 innings. He struck out 11 batters in that frame. So I think you can make a case for Bauer. I think he will see some ownership here. We do know that the Red Sox are anything but unbeatable this season. You know, they've obviously been hit or miss. We've threw pitchers against them the last two nights. So this would be a – would it be a DFSR first, do you think, if we went – pitcher, pitcher, pitcher against the Red Sox in a 3-game series?
Probably. Well, I didn't play Carrasco, but I know that was like a suggestion that didn't.
You didn't play Carrasco? We played Carrasco.
No, not in cash. I played him in some on no, I played. We played Archer.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah, but I was thinking my GBP.
Yeah, no, I pivoted to Carrasco in some of those Archer lineups for GBP, but that didn't actually work out. But yeah, so it wouldn't be that. The Bauer thing. He's a heavy underdog, but he's one of these guys that traditionally, for at least for our system, just comes in typically as a higher points per dollar play because the price is low because he's had so much blow up stuff that's happened to him this season. He ran really, really bad. Well, he let a lot of home runs, and that's not necessarily running bad, but the BABIP was up there through the roof for a while. It's kind of starting to trend down finally. The XFIP has always run much better than the ERA. He's been running so bad on ERA, which has kept a lot of his just like the price down on him so much. Now this one again puts it to the test because he's a huge underdog. The Red Sox, while not a great team, I mean, they're not really a team that you want to target pitchers against like often. I wouldn't say so. You know, they don't strike out much at the top of the order, and they are pretty patient, and that can be a problem for a guy like Bauer. But that being said, you're not going to get 10 strikeout per nine stuff from anyone else in the $8,000 range, right? Like, so if he's 8,300 on DraftKings, if you're just going to kind of just cross your fingers and say he's going to, you know, be a strikeout per inning guy, hopefully against the Red Sox here tonight, and just maybe just avoid getting completely blown up, I think you can go there. Because otherwise, like, you know, you mentioned Perdomo, and he's just kind of a guy, he's 6,000, so like whatever. Jose Berrios, he's maybe in the discussion here. The White Sox are not a very good team. Berrios is not necessarily a very good pitcher. He's like an 8K per nine. Like, do you see Berrios as maybe safer? Like, we haven't projected for just about the same amount of points, Berrios and Bauer. Do you see Berrios being safer just because the matchup is a little bit better? Like, he's a minus one. So, like, he's a minus 175 favorite against the White Sox, whereas Bauer is a minus 170 or plus 170 dog, basically. If you know, if you held those two guys up to each other, would you take Berrios just because of the – could you talk yourself Berrios just because of the matchup?
Well, the matchup is unquestionably better. You know, the White Sox this season have had that dramatic platoon split between right and left-handed pitching. They've been way worse against righties, being one of the bottom five teams in the majors and the worst team overall in the AL against righties. So, you know, I get it. I think that's a reasonable place to begin. Berrios, to me, just isn't as good a pitcher as Bauer, or at least for fantasy purposes. Like, he just doesn't strike out as many guys, and I don't really like that. So that's I think kind of the elephant in the room. You know, that's the
trade-off.
And Berrios also has this pretty significant blow-up potential. Like, if you look at his last, you know, 7 or 8 starts, he's got multiple games with negative fantasy points. He's got a 2.2 game there. Like, he can definitely just get lit up as well as a 23-year-old pitcher. So, yeah, it's a trade-off. I mean, it's close for me. I don't think I wouldn't apply any subjective measure to put one in over the other. But I think you can make a reasonable case.
Yeah, that's, and it's interesting. And the reason I put it up as a trade-off is because, like, they're around the same price. And they're around the same price and around the same projection, but they're getting they're basically generating their projection from like two completely different places, right? Like, yeah, Berrios is generating more of his projection from some of that win expectation, a little bit more K expectation in terms of like, not that he's going to strike out more guys than Bauer, but that he gets a little bit more of a bump on his expected Ks, just because the White Sox are just not a very good team. Whereas Bauer takes a little bit of a hit on the Ks, but he's just, no one else kind of sits close to him in terms of like what his K expectation is. So yeah, it's really close. I think in this case, I'd probably trend a little bit more toward the better matchup. If I just had to pick one or the other, like, but it's so close, and, I'm probably going to wait to see like how some of these Vegas lines kind of shake out during the day. Cause it will matter, because right now when you run DraftKings lineups on our site, you're getting, you know, a lot of times it's kind of locked in. Like yesterday, it was just locked into Kluber and Weaver basically the entire day. It was like, these are just the two guys we're going to run on DraftKings, and that's just going to be the way it is. Today, it's you know, it's mostly Carlos Martinez and then just a smattering of all these other guys we mentioned, like 15% of Perdomo and 30% of Bauer, 10% of Berrios, good lord, 40% of Derek Holland because he's 5,200. I'll do something about that so we don't have to see his name. But, he's just so cheap. Like, at this point, they're just trying to jam in some of the more expensive bats. It's kind of all a big question mark. And, like, the guys, like, I mean, the other three guys that I kind of passed over before, Keuchel, Strasburg, and Arrieta, like, those would be considered, like, real arms. I'm not sure. I mean, how do you feel about any one of that group stand out to you as... Like, let's say you want to pivot to GPP. Does, between those three that are all sort of priced, in, at least on DraftKings, in the 10 to 11,000 range, any one of those, like, who would you pick from that group? Because I think that's, like, a group of, like, real arms and just not in the best situations.
I think the guy with the least question marks there for me is probably Arrieta, which is saying something, I guess. Strasburg, we don't know how many innings he's going to pitch. Keuchel's sort of been up and down. Doesn't really have the K stuff to warrant the price. He's more of a high floor guy, thanks to his super elite ground ball stuff. And the fact that just Strasburg and Keuchel are facing each other obviously makes the win less likely for both. And the fact that they're both facing great offenses. You know, the Astros and Nats are first and third in the league in terms of WOBA against these respective.
Yeah, but that's a little a little wrong though, because
Bryce
and Harper, Trey Turner and Goodwin, like a lot of the guys that have done the most damage for the Nats this year are just not in the lineup anymore. So, like, I get it. I do. Looking at that season long number makes sense, sort of, but like.
So Bryce Harper, though, as a lefty, facing a lefty, he's a lot less strong against left handed pitching. The Nats have still been strong against lefties regardless. I know Harper's good, but I'm saying I don't think you couldn't call the matchup good from my perspective. And when you're paying those sorts of prices for a guy without ace level strikeout stuff, I just don't know. I just don't know what you're trying to accomplish on some level. Like, yeah, I get that he's only 9,200 on FanDuel, so maybe you just say, hey, it's cheap, and so we make a run for it. But I think Arrieta has the strikeout stuff. I think, you know, he's up against Sal Romano, makes the win a lot more likely for him than either of those other two guys. And, you know, for GPP purposes, I've often said that you sort of you can almost throw out a pitcher's chance to win a game. But I guess all this to say, I just don't really like Keuchel or Strasburg. I don't really see the point in playing either of those guys. I can see more upside from other positions or from other guys at similar price points. And so I don't know that I really love Arrieta either.
I kind of put you on the spot. I don't really love any of these guys either at their price points. They just all sort of fit into a category of, like, real name arms pushing up against ace level guys that we just had kind of skipped over, mostly because the matchups weren't that great or probably a little bit overpriced. I think I'd probably take Keuchel of the group. I do think that there's more to the Nats being just much worse, much worse of a team right now than they were, like, early in the season. They have, I believe, a slightly lower implied run total than the Reds do right now. He's a -150. Keuchel is, I think, Arrieta is probably pushing up to -160. I think, yeah, it's really close. It's probably closer to coin flip territory, and I would just go Keuchel, just based a little bit on the matchup. All right, well, before we get out of here, we'll hit some stacks. Hit us with a sponsor before we talk about some of the bats here.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is an app that you can use to play one-on-one fantasy matchups where you choose a player and then you just choose a player you think your guy is going to outperform. So you could go between Keuchel and Strasburg tonight, Doug. You could just pick one side of that. You would pick Keuchel, it sounds like. And if Keuchel outperforms Strasburg from a fantasy perspective, then it's a winner-take-all matchup. So if you put $25 on the line, you would win the $50 or whatever the payout would be. They probably take some small percent for the rake. But just really clean, really easy, very easy to follow as well. You can enter or accept as many challenges as you want on any given night. And you can also just troll around the app for challenges that other people issue, because very frequently you'd be surprised to see, you know, in the DFS space, things can kind of get a little inbred where people all kind of believe the same things and put bets in on the same types of guys. But the No Halftime ecosystem doesn't exactly work that way. You can absolutely find good plays. And especially as football season comes up, just get ready for people to be jamming whoever their hometown quarterback is and almost take it personally when you say that some guy you think is better will outperform him. So check out NoHalftime.com, promo code DFSR to get you started.
All right, so let's take a look real quick at the evening slate of games. The highest implied run total on the day here is the Twins, who face Derek Holland. You know, guys like Dozier at the top of the lineup. Do you see the Twins as being, like, just probably the chalk play here? I knew they do switch their lineup around a little bit based on righty-lefty. So Dozier will hit there, but then they will throw. I mean, with Snow hurt too, they've been moving Buxton up in the order. Do you see them as, ends up being the chalk play just mostly because of the matchup with Holland?
I think so. I mean, Haaland is just kind of the best of all worlds here. He walks a ton of guys, almost 5 walks per 9 this year. Doesn't strike out a ton. I mean, I guess he's not terrible, 6.8 Ks per 9. But really with Haaland, what you're getting is his very low ground ball rate and his subsequent huge fly ball rate. I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but he's got a 2.12 home runs per 9 this year over 123 innings. More importantly, however, is that so Steamer and Zips, who are two of the most respected kind of season-long projection algorithms, they have him projected going forward at an average of 1.75 home runs per 9, which for your frame of reference would be one of the five worst all-time home runs per 9 for a career for a pitcher with 400 innings or more. So that's that just tells you probably all you need to know. He's arguably the pitcher most likely to give up a home run besides his teammate James Shields in all of the majors, so... who pitched yesterday? Must be fun to be a White Sox fan.
How brutal. Shields actually wasn't horrible, all things considered. Like Minnesota only scored 3 runs to the.
Okay, but you can't turn the game on, right? Like if you're a White Sox fan and Shields,
I'm not defending him. He's horrible. I'm completely with you. The White Sox are the White Sox. You hope for football season to start. The Bears are going to sing too. Maybe you just wish you became a Cubs fan. Like if you grew up whichever side, like South Side or North Side, whatever. Whatever stupid size cities on.
South Side till I die, dude. I got relatives down there. Shout out to the Davis.
I do think that the Twins will be pretty popular here, especially if you're not paying up for sale, just because you do have to pay for them. Like they've gotten a little bit expensive. Guys like Dozier are up over 4,000 on FanDuel. Even guys like Eduardo Escobar is up over 3,000. Buxton's over 3. So like you're not getting any of these guys real cheap, but they're in just such a great spot. And like you said, Derek Collins is an absolute fly ball and home run machine. After the Twins, any other teams kind of sticking out to you here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of bad pitchers going tonight. I think you got Martin Perez, who's kind of like a Derek Holland light in some ways. Strikes out fewer guys, but also walks fewer guys. Just kind of been bad, you know, kind of came up as a big prospect. We now have almost 400 innings of him at a 4.77 xFIP clip. Because he just doesn't strike anyone out. So I think you could grab the Angels, particularly the guys at the top of the order. One thing I like about stacking the Angels is that they're pretty top heavy. So, you know, you can go with Trout, Pujols, even Calhoun, although that maybe not a perfect spot for him here. But really what I like here is just that Perez is kind of a lousy pitcher. So they're another team I've got my eye on that doesn't really strike you as the super popular or kind of household chalk stack type thing, but as a stack that I'm looking to run in big tournaments where I think I can get some separation.
Yeah, Maven is still coming really cheap hitting leadoff as long as he's still there.
Oh yeah, he'll probably lead off against the lefty.
Yeah, 2,600 on FanDuel. That's just a great price. Like he'll be pretty much a staple for cash games for us, I think, just because he's so cheap. When you're hitting at the top, when you hit Maven has a track record too, especially with the stolen bases. If you're gonna be that cheap, hit at the top of the order in the better side of your platoon split, like at least for our systems purposes, like you're just pretty much a lock. And actually, if you spend down for Carlos Martinez and then you take a discount on Maben and maybe one of the discounted bats, it's pretty actually easy to play Trout. And I usually don't advocate paying up for $5,000 for a bat in terms of cash games, just because it's just really expensive. Trout's actually the one guy you can make an exception for because he's so goddamn good. and this is just kind of the kind of spot. If Martin Perez can't really strike anybody out, that's death for a guy like Trout, right? Like he just murders guys like this. So usually I think $5,000 is probably just too much to pay. Here's I think a time where you can make an exception. $5,700 on DraftKings, very very expensive. Still possibly just worth it. Like his floor is just so high just in terms of just kind of what he does. One other team I was kind of sticking out here in terms of our system, a team that's kind of showing up is the Cubs. They face Sal Romano. Romano has been a walk machine through 45 innings this year. He's at walking more than 4 batters per 9, strikes out about 7 per 9. That's bad news for facing the Cubs. Getting through the middle of the order when you can't strike in, getting through the middle of that Cubs order when you can't strike anybody out is a big problem. Now, Chris Bryant, I don't think he went on the DL, but he has been hurt. It does probably knock that some of their expectation down if he's not in the lineup. That being said, guys like Schwarber, Zobrist, Rizzo, even John Jay, who doesn't have much power at the top, but he's still coming pretty cheap. Really just the whole entire top of the Cubs order against a guy like Romano, who just walks too many guys, feels like a spot that I'm probably, again, willing to pay up and kind of hoping Bryant is back in the lineup. Any other teams before we get out of here?
I want to touch on one quick thing real quick is Kyle Schwarber. So Schwarber was a guy that the DFS community was getting very, very impatient with this season. He was drifting down in the lineup, and people were like, well, what's wrong with him? And, you know, he became kind of a, like a running joke type of guy. And then, you know, baseball people are so fickle, and now he just goes to being like a hugely chalk play last night, performing on it, of course, on like 33 or 3,400. So just want to remind everyone once again, if there's someone you're sick of, you're sick of seeing them in the lineups, their price is drifting down, we can get these guys at 23, 2,400 when they're still perceived to be bad, when their baseline is that they're actually good. Like if there's one lesson you want to take from DFS baseball, and I think that you should be listening closely because DFS baseball might be the one with the tightest ownership these days. I don't know, maybe you disagree with that, but as people get better and better at this, we can still make money when people's emotional reaction to certain players is unreasonable, right? And if we're the people who can have a steady hand and look at guys, look at their career track records, their established baselines, and follow those, I think we can still make money at this thing. But not if you X out the very people your instinct tells you to X out are the exact people you should lock into every lineup. So I don't have any other stacks right now, Doug, but I wanted to leave everyone with that sound.
I think the chalkiest we've seen anything in DFS was the end of the NBA season. When guys like Tyler Ulis just like the price refused to correct. I think after that, this is probably the next closest, right? Like
every night in baseball, we have 90%. Like a 90% guy in a lot.
Nah, it's overstating a little bit. But it is high. Like when you,
not every night, frequently. I'll say the last 7 or 8 nights I've played, I've had at least one guy over. Well, I guess not last night. So not exempting last night. Before that, there were like we had Sale at like 90%, or I'm sorry, Kluber at 90%. This is maybe I'm misremembering, but it's very rare for us to play someone who seems to be under like a 20 or 30% start. And I guess I just don't remember basketball being like that. But yeah, nonetheless, DFS is converging. And a way that you can get an edge is by taking advantage of other people's.
I famously wrote for everyone that read it for our midseason awards for biggest bust of the year. I wrote up Schwarber and I described his season as being a roller coaster where the roller coaster went off the track and everyone died. Like that was the sort of, that was the line that I was proud of for writing that. But yeah, no, he's turned it around. They sent him back down to the minors. He got whatever bad luck out of a system that he was just kind of running into, and has come back up. The BABIP is still 240. He's got a 240 BABIP and like a 750 OPS. Like that's you're just fine if that's going to be your case, because when the BABIP trends back up, he's probably never going to be a huge BABIP guy, but as it trends back up and he just kind of lowers the K's, which he's done a little bit, and he's still at a 13% walk rate. All this being said, yes, like the steady hand approach in baseball is always the one to take, especially with young guys. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/MLB, free 3-day trial to our projection system that now includes NFL. So you sign up now, you'll be good for the first month of NFL. And free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, back tomorrow talking a full Friday in baseball. Enjoy it.
Yeah, man, we'll do.